This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Before we get started this week, I want to, first of all, thank all of you listeners for helping to make us number one. And what I mean by that is that FeedSpot has recently contacted me to let me know that I have been listed as the top magician's podcast in the world. Apparently, there are 15 magic podcasts in the world, and due to whatever analytics that they use, they have designated the Magic Word podcast as the number one. Yay for us, and yay for you. Thank you very much. We appreciate you listening and coming back from week to week. And we also thank all of those people who are our sponsors. We thank you also for all of the friends of the Magic Word who are patrons who have helped keep this podcast going for so many years. Thank you, thank you, and thank you. And speaking of sponsors, this week's episode is brought to you by the Portland Magic Jam. That's going to be coming up on April the 4th through the 6th in, well, of all places, Portland, Oregon. And the people this year who will be in the lineup includes Eric Tate, John Gustafaro, and John Armstrong plus Eric Jones, all stars. It sounds like just an amazing lineup. If you are into close-up, I think this would be it. And you're also somewhere, anywhere near the Northwest, this is one you probably don't want to miss. We'll have more information about that later. And you can always also go to themagicwordpodcast.com for a link to this website, and as well as other magic conventions around the world. If your particular convention is not listed, please let me know, and I'll be glad to list your convention there for no charge. Just let me know, drop me an email at scott@themagicwordpodcast.com, and I'll be glad to include your convention in the convention guide. This week's episode actually was recorded while I was attending a convention, or I went out to Blackpool here recently, and prior to that, while I was in London, went by the Magic Circle and had a chance to speak with a few people, one of whom is our featured guest this week, Miss Catherine Rhodes, and she actually is one of the examiners, meaning she's the one who, along with a couple of others, will do the examinations to see that people are qualified to become members of the Magic Circle. So she talks a little bit about that. She also was kind of interesting. First of all, let me back up that Ian Rowland was the one who had put her on my radar, and I certainly trust things that Ian suggests to me. And she also said not only is she a brilliant performer, but she specializes in mentalism, which I thought was kind of interesting. There are very few women in mentalism who I know who are doing it successfully, and she happens to be one of them. And she also is a light aircraft pilot. Although I mentioned that, we really didn't get into that because there were so many other things that we got to talk about with her travels and her development of some of her creative ideas. And she does tip something in here, which is a cards across routine. And I'm telling you right now up front, it's a brilliant idea, but it is her creation. And I'm encouraging you not to try to steal this, as tempting as that might be, because it's not yours, it's hers, it's proprietary, and it's a brilliant idea. Congratulations, Kathy, on that, and also all of your other successes. So I'm going to step out of the way now that I've kind of summarized a little bit about what you're going to be hearing and what she has to say, but I'm going to let you hear it in her own words. So let's travel to London, England, and we'll sit at the Magic Circle while we have a chance to chat with this week's guest, Miss Catherine Rhodes, here on The Magic Word. We are here at the Magic Circle, actually in the library, and the reason we're able to talk is because that the library is closed. It's after hours right now, so we can speak out loud. Usually they don't like people talking in the library down here. And I've got with me Catherine Rhodes, who is someone who is, she was a vice president here at the Magic Circle. She's now working with examinations to make sure that people qualify to be able to get into the circle. And we're going to be talking about that, as well as she has a band, plays in a band.
Used to,
and also has her pilot's license for light planes, and also friends with the American or Dutch mentalist Evan Caster. I'd like to ask about that a little bit. And you've done a one-man show then at theater over at the Wilton's Music Hall, and mainly your one-person show has to do with mentalism. So I want to talk kind of about that, about I often don't see women into mentalism, so I just think that that is pretty darn fascinating. So anyhow, that and other things I'd like to talk with my guest today, and I think you'll be engaged as I am, so please welcome Catherine Rose. Hey there, Catherine.
Hi.
So glad to really make your acquaintance. It was Ian Rowland who had put me in touch with you and said, you need to speak with this lady. She is awesome. And he has just said so many nice things about having enjoyed your show and everything,
as
being a mentalist and everything then too. So you have been a member here at the Magic Circle for like
32 years.
Oh, yes. Goodness. Okay. You already look like you're even 32. So, okay.
Thank you.
So you were one of the early women who got in early, just as they were making the...
Yeah, not long after they decided it was the right thing.
Okay. But you had an interest in magic, obviously, prior to that.
Yes,
that led that up there. Were you performing around?
No, not at all. No. My interest was, obviously, from childhood, there's a slight interest, but it was more on the mechanical side of things, knowing how things are done. I had no interest in performing whatsoever.
Okay.
I was the bookish member of the family. I was the one that liked to be locked in the room with a computer or just playing on my own with my Lego or something, or taking things apart and seeing how they worked. That was my interest, which is both my granddads had a slight interest in magic. So I got to see some tricks from them.
Okay.
Which sort of kept my interest going. And obviously I got given the books and I learned things from books and what have you, but absolutely no desire to be a performer whatsoever. That was my sister's domain, not mine.
Well, from what I understand also, from what Ian had said, is that you do have a creative mind and like to build things then also.
Yes.
So I guess it's kind of that scientific brain coming through the engineer side.
Yeah. I'm a lot happier on my own in my workshop and making things.
Yeah. Just kind of on your own and kind of thinking of different ideas.
Yeah.
How are you inspired by things then?
It's a question I get asked occasionally, and the answer, there is no specific answer. Inspiration comes from everywhere.
True. If you're open to it.
It could even be just a sound could inspire something. Just a conversation you overhear in a supermarket. Inspiration is all around you. You just have to know how to spot it, I think.
And do you draw from music or from art or, I mean, this is coming from different things. I mean, obviously in different sources, there's no one thing that would necessarily say, okay, I can say this is what inspires me from what you just said there. But are there things that have, like a trick in particular said, oh yeah, whenever I saw this painting of whatever, it's made me think, hey, has there been something like that you could say you were directly inspired by?
Nothing comes to mind.
Okay.
Nothing springing to mind. No, it's not. My inspiration is generally never a specific singular thing like a painting or, you know, something like that. It could be a collection of things or more of a series of things, like a section in a TV show, for example. It wouldn't be just a particular picture. It would be a group of things together that would inspire whatever.
Do you feel that you're more creative for presentational style or with physical things and putting things together, or both?
I would say with the presentation side of things would be, without wanting to sound arrogant, that would be where I shine more, I think. And I think part of that comes from my approach to working on new things. Obviously, if I'm wanting to put a new effect in the act, I will learn the routine, the mechanics to be able to perform, because you always want the magic to work.
Sure.
That has to be absolutely nailed. That will get that gold. And then I will worry about the presentation. I'd never work on the two in tandem.
Okay.
You know, I might have an idea for the presentation and know the trick, but then I will work on the mechanics of the trick to get that right. And then the presentation will follow later, because that takes so much longer.
It does.
And if it's a commercial effect, like somebody would say, oh, have you seen the sprinkle rings or whatever from so-and-so, I will go and look at the trailer, because everything's got a trailer these days, but I will always watch it with the sound off.
Oh, so you're not influenced.
Because I don't want to be influenced by somebody else's routine. I want to be able to see the effect, and I'll know if that is going to suit me and if it sparks an idea in me of where I'd like to take it. As though I never watch a trailer with the sound on.
I like that idea, because I was about to ask you, whenever that you're reading a book and it explains something, oftentimes books will include patter with that. And a lot of times magicians will just take that verbatim, because that's the easy way of doing it, obviously. And that's the first thing I throw out.
Never read it.
Yeah.
Never read it. I might read it once after I've got something absolutely solidly down and this is my routine, this is how it's going from start to finish, I'm happy with this, mm-hmm. I might go back, if it's come from a book, go back and read what the pattern is there to see how close it is or how far removed it is. There might be something in there you go, oh, that's a bit clever, that could work its way in, but it's mm-hmm. often not the case.
Yeah. And we were talking about mentalism a little bit earlier then. So that's really been more of your passion then in later years? Or are you kind of, when you said that you were influenced by the magic, I guess, you know, that your father and uncle, you said, had shown some things?
Yeah, both my grandfathers. If I'm looking for inspiration or researching stuff, I generally start within mentalism texts and mm-hmm. what have you, because that's mostly where my ideas come from. The style of effects I do all come from that, but I don't perform them as a traditional mentalist would. I get the inspiration for routines comes from the mentalism world more than the magic world, I'd say.
Hmm. And then you apply it to magic?
And then I take it in a magic way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if, you know, balance, it's probably 75% to 25%, 75% being sort of like where I look for mentalism for
right
ways of doing things or what have you, yeah, or inspiration for effects.
In the context of performing your show, do you have something in which you weave all of magic and mentalism, or kind of say, okay, we're going to do magic and then cut? I mean, I'm referring, let's say, like to Kreskin, because he'll do like linking finger rings and it's okay, put that aside, and then the rest of it's all mentalism, and some other people follow a pattern kind of like that too, or do you do magic interweave?
Yeah, it's all mixed up together. I don't want the audience to be able to see sort of like stop points, and you know they're not chapters. This is a show. Mm-hmm. This has to flow. They're going to see a magic show.
Yeah,
that's what I want them to see. I don't want it. I think if you've got right, this is the bit that's going to be a card trick.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to do some coin tricks. Then we'll do a rope trick. Then we'll do a bit of mime reading. That's all those chapters. And I don't think that flows. For some people, that works fine.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it all has to be right from start to finish. And there are so many callbacks throughout the show uh-huh. as well. So it all blends and like there's a thread going through the whole thing.
So at the end, does it all really come together from the standpoint that people...
Yeah, there'll be a few things that happen throughout the show that not really sure whether that worked or not, but it all comes good at the end and everything makes sense.
Right.
A bigger payoff.
I'm thinking of, was it Chuck Hickok, Mentalism Incorporated, in which he was talking about how it builds. In other words, that you would do a magic square to begin with. And then you say, well, this is something that any of you can learn. It's just a matter of understanding the mathematics behind this. Hmm. And then they say, okay, I'll understand that. And then he does something else that's kind of like, okay. And before long, I mean, he just doesn't jump right into something that's absolutely impossible. So at the end, you kind of have believed this and believed that, but you can't jump into the third part. And I'm assuming it's yours. Sounds like it's kind of like that also, that your program builds.
Yeah, very, very similar. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Magic Square, for a perfect example, I will get the number quite early on in the show as part of something else.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's referenced a couple of times just to remind people about it.
Hmm.
But the big payoff comes with the square much later on in the show, and it all comes together. And, you know, how could you possibly know that?
I love that idea. I have spoken with many magicians, or mentalists in particular, and ask about most all of us do a magic square at some point in the show. And some open with it, some in the middle, some at the end. And I like that what you've done is you kind of emphasize that number to remind people. So when you come back to it, it makes sense. Yeah. It's not like that you're coming up with something else.
Yeah.
So,
because I get the number during a cards across routine.
Mm-hmm.
And so it fits within the routine the way I get the number, but
which
it doesn't
make
any sense.
Cards across routine. That was one of the things also that Ian was saying. She does the most wonderful cards across routine you've ever seen. What makes it so unique?
Because it's not a card trick. Cards across is something I wanted to do for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
Probably 15 years I've been working on cards across, learning mm-hmm. different methods and trying to find one, because it's a great plot.
Yeah.
But I've never seen or found a presentation that I thought, yeah, that's right.
For you?
For me, yeah.
Yeah, like Matt King's got a great one for him.
And I've never seen it.
Okay. He did a Blackpool,
But if Matt's doing it, I'm sure it's brilliant. But I can't comment because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
But you see a lot of people doing it because it's a great trick. Sure. But all the presentations I've seen or what I and was inspired by at that point were all, how great am I?
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about the magician doing something and the spectators, which you need two spectators up, they were almost insignificant at the end. The payoff wasn't for them. It was for how clever am I doing this? And mm-hmm. and I didn't like that. And I got inspired by Hanna Gunther from Sweden, who does a lot of work with Tom Stone. Mm-hmm. We were doing a show together and she said, this trick would suit you really well. You should have a look at this. And it was one of Tom's tricks, the name of which I can't remember. And I looked at it and I disagreed with her. I didn't say this to her, but I disagreed. That this trick is not for me. Mm-hmm. But there was an element within it that I thought, that's really good. I like that. And it was just that germ of an idea that sure. suddenly, oh. And then, so the whole cards cross thing, I haven't really performed it for many magicians, but I do it as a quiz. The cards are just points. They're not cards, it's the points.
But you do use playing cards.
I still okay. use playing cards, yeah, but they're just to represent points. And so, and it's a quiz show. So one person's losing points and one person's gaining points.
Brilliant. I understand where you're going. Yeah. Okay.
Huh. And so it all comes, when a good one person loses, one person wins, and it will always be a couple, but even, you know, just two people that know each other, won't be just be random
sure.
people. So there's sort of like a bit of playful fighting right. going on.
So you can actually go back and forth. You wouldn't necessarily all go one way. So, oop, you lost that one. She just goes, yeah. she gets this back, you know, yeah. and he's got to give that up or whatever. Yeah.
So you got the whole humor of one person gets really easy questions, one person gets really difficult questions, but they're both picking from the same pot. They just happen to be pulling that. And obviously there has to be more for the simple fact that although these are the really difficult questions, sometimes you're going to get a scientist up there that's going to know the atomic weight of gold or something like that. And this has happened. So you always got the backup in there so that I can still mm-hmm. go backwards and forwards because the points can go up and down. But at the end, it will always end up with you've lost three, you've won three.
Right.
They check their points. And by that point, they've forgotten all about the cards at that point.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's just the playback because there's just all the humor of going in. It's just a fun thing. And then you got the big bam at the end.
Right. So when the cards are going back and forth, not necessarily like the, you know, ace of clubs and then the two of clubs or whatever. It's you're no, not calling
it. There's none of that. I'm taking it around and I'm throwing it up and it's going invisibly round the room and you get right. none of that. That the forgotten about the cards.
Right.
You know, just like how many points did you start with? Get okay. your points out of your pocket. Count your points.
Okay. But they are invisible cards that you're, or say cards, numbers, essentially. So once they say that, I say that we wouldn't even have to do anything that nonsense.
We're just talking about the point. We're doing the quiz.
Sure.
So you've won a point. You've lost a point.
Period.
And so on and so on.
Brilliant. Mm. Okay. Mm. Yeah. And so again, that's one of those things we're talking about as far as being inspired by something. You were inspired by something you saw Tom Stone did, and then taking an element of something, saying, well, this trick might have been recommended for me, but I don't see that as being something. However,
yeah,
with something in there that you're because you've been looking for such a long time for that.
Yeah,
for something to come together.
Yeah, I can't remember Tom's trick, but it was there was a question involved and somebody getting a question wrong, and that spiraled into the whole quiz show thing. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so yeah, within a couple of days, it was done.
Do you ever use music in your show?
Rarely.
Okay.
If it's a bigger show, then I use some music.
Mm-hmm. Do you mean to get people up and down or in the background while you're talking?
I get to walk on to walk off to. When I used to do, it's got so many names, the paper flowers from Cone, the Dakota did, yep. you know, the paper
flowers. Yeah, right. I used to, spring flowers, yeah, the Cone.
There was a load of patter with that. And then as they're all pouring out, there's a beautiful piece of music with the never ending that the music just got crazier and crazier, which mm-hmm. fitted. I used to use that. And I use a piece of music for the Magic Square mm-hmm. When I'm doing that. Because when you're filling out a square, there's nothing for the audience to do. There's nothing for them to see.
Pretty boring.
That's half a minute of dead time. Mm-hmm. And in the UK, we've got this program called Countdown that's very famous. And it's a word and numbers game. Hmm. And they have there's a very famous 30 seconds piece of music that they have in that while they're doing their working out sort of things. Everybody knows that piece of music and it's 30 seconds. So I use that.
Kind of like in the US, we know Jeopardy.
Yes. That sort of thing. So I use it for that. And the new PK touch routine that I'm doing, mm-hmm. I've got a specific piece of music that I use within that because
it's more haunting.
Because it's very comical, all the setup to it, mm-hmm. And then there's this really creepy, haunting music plays in the background when I actually start the actual touches part of it, which the juxtaposition between the funny, the deadly serious is so stark that it just heightens that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only times I really use music.
My partner, Jamie Salinas, and I used to do a lot of seances. And one of the things that we would close with, or he would be the touches, PK touches, with particularly using like a really spooky looking doll.
Mm.
So by touching the doll, the person's going to be feeling it. That's kind of like an idea, I guess. That's, you have something like that as well?
Very similar, it's the most stupid voodoo doll you've ever seen. I mean, I made it in a couple of hours, and it's...
So you don't intentionally try to make it look creepy or anything?
No, I wanted it to look...
To be silly.
Really silly.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got wonky eyes, it's got crazy hair. It's really difficult to describe it. You'd have to see it, but...
Yeah. So yours is really more of a comedy-ish routine, but then it gets real at the
absolutely.
End?
Absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So it leads up...
Right up to the point when the touches start, when it's mm-hmm. that sudden switch... And it really sells that moment more because the person suddenly raises their hand because they felt a touch, and everybody, oh.
Yeah. I was watching somebody, I can't remember who it was, and I want to say it might have been Levent, but whoever it was, the point is they were going along and everything was funny. And then when it got ready for the magic moment, they would pause because, hey, something's getting ready to happen. And it kind of draws attention because you're... tempo is moving so well along, but when you change the tempo, that draws attention. It's like, wait a minute, something's happened. I don't know what it is, but something psychological in there. And so like what you're saying, that sounds brilliant because you're making it kind of funny. And then when you stop for just a moment and then it starts to get serious, then it becomes, ooh, wait a minute, what the heck just happened?
Yeah.
But if you go too fast, they'll miss the magic moment, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's brilliant.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's one of those things that a pro would do that just takes a while to kind of develop. Those kinds of thoughts, you know, on that. So other kinds of things, do you as a mentalist do anything that's going to be a disclaimer of saying what you're about to see is just for entertainment purposes, or do you have people that are going to be believing you?
Never do that. If anybody comes up afterwards and thinks that you've got special powers, I will always put them straight. I'll mm-hmm. tell them how I did things, but I will... You know, I'm not a Jedi. I'm not a god. This is entertainment purposes. It's all trickery. It's just a bit of fun.
Because people are going to be coming up to you and saying, "Hey, who's going to win the World Cup this year or something?"
It does happen. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I don't know if I could do this. Just I'll be on my yacht right now. I'd have won the lottery twice over.
yeah. Speaking of lottery, have you done some lottery tricks?
I have. Yeah, I've done a couple. One. I found, because I've moved recently, and I found half of it, and I can't for the life of me remember what it was. And the other one I remember, I modified Scott Creasy's Psy Lottery. I took mm-hmm. a piece of that and turned it into a lottery trick, which I did a few times, probably 7 years ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't fully remember it, but I don't know why I stopped doing it, but I have got it on a recording of it, so I'll be able to watch it back, because I really should put that in, because I found the props now.
Well, that's one of those things, I think, in which the audience, just as you had said, always will come up to you and say, I want to know, like, if I'm going to find love or get this promotion or whatever it's going to be. But then I think if you address that early on and talking about winning the lottery and saying, well, you know, I can't, but...
I can simulate it.
I can simulate something like that.
Mm-hmm. Similar with the PK touches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the humor is based around voodoo, because mm-hmm. that can be quite funny because it's so silly. But point out that this is not voodoo. I'm going to simulate this. This is not what's actually happening.
That's good. And I was about to mention that because I know that is particularly in the U.S. or down the South and around Louisiana and New Orleans, in which that actually is a legitimate religion of voodoo, and not supposed to make fun of it because people have that as a faith. And so there are some things that shouldn't be touched, I guess, you know. But I think if you're trying to be kind of making it silly, I doubt that you ever get anybody coming in saying, oh, you shouldn't be messing with things you don't know.
Yeah. And when you see the doll, it's so clearly not serious.
Yeah.
It's so clearly not. And just the way that it's all approached.
Uh-huh.
If anybody did take it seriously, I hope they would tell me, because I'd try and fix that, because I don't want anybody to think it's real.
Right. at the end, what is the feeling? I mean, you don't have conduct, or do you do seances, by the way?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, what is the feeling that audiences have? I mean, do you want them to go away saying, oh, that was a fun time? Or it's like, well, I wonder how she did that?
Both.
Wow, good answer. Okay.
I want them, I don't want them to know how it's done. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if they know how it's all done, then I haven't done my job properly. Mm-hmm. But I want them to have had a really good time.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're there for.
Right, right. Now we're going to take a moment for a few words from our sponsor. The Portland Magic Jam coming up on April the 4th, 5th, and 6th of 2025. And that's just right around the corner, folks. So you want to make sure that you get signed up for this. And I've got with me right now the person who is in charge of this and can tell us all the information you really need to know outside of the website. And here he is right now, Greg Moreland. Hey there, Greg. How are you?
Hey, very good. Here to tell you about the Portland Magic Jam.
So tell me, who is going to be on this year? Some of the talent's going to be there.
We have four headliners this year. We got Eric Jones. We got two Erics and two Johns. Eric Jones, Eric Tate, John Armstrong, and John Gustafaro.
That's a pretty good variety because they all come from different backgrounds and have some different expertise. So this way they can share a lot of things with everyone.
Right. And it might sound at first blush like it's weighted heavy on close-up. It's not. Armstrong, it's going to be all about stand-up. Eric Jones is going to be half and half. At first blush, it's not all about close-up.
I know this has been going on for quite some time, and you've been running it since what, 2009?
2009, yeah. 16 years now.
And so you've had a lot of other people who have been coming to this convention, and for those who have attended, know how good this is, and this is going to be, again, another just outstanding time that starts on Friday. So tell me a little bit about the schedule. It starts on Friday,
goes through Sunday. When you say we've had good talent, just last year alone, we had Joshua Jay, Andy Gladwin, Carissa Hendricks, and John Carney. So you said, tell you about the events. Well, we have four headliners, and over the course of the weekend, each one of them does a lecture. We have two evening shows, one Friday and Saturday, also open to the public for an extra fee. We have a close-up round robin on Saturday where we set a little stage, close-up mini. The performers rotate around into three rooms. We got about maybe 40 people in each room, 40 of the magician, the attendees, and then the performers rotate around. We have another evening show Saturday, panel discussion on Sunday, grab bag lecture on Sunday, and then extra fee workshop. Oh, and a contest. We have a contest on Sunday, parlor contest.
Then after the convention's over, there will be workshops?
Yeah. At 1 p.m. and 4:30 p.m., John Armstrong has a workshop, and Eric Tate. These are extra fee workshops.
Mm-hmm. And people could sign up for those where?
At the event. The girls at the registration table will have a list for people to sign up.
That sounds great. So where can people go to find out more information and to register and have links to the hotel, et cetera? Where do they go?
PortlandMagicJam.com or, for short, PDXMagicJam.com. It's got all the info on the registration, the hotel. I guess the discounted registration will run until about a week before the event. So last week in March, it's right now it's $170, and then the door price will go up.
Very good. Greg, thanks very much. I appreciate it. And for everybody, again, remember to check it out at their website and go register today. Save on your registration by getting the lower rate there. And that's going to be, again, April the 4th through the 6th of April in, of course, the Portland Magic Jam is in Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon.
Thanks again, Greg.
Thank you.
And now back to our podcast with Catherine Rhodes. Going back to the Magic Circle then, and working with the examinations and what you've been doing then for a while, did you go, and you were vice president when Megan Swan was the president?
Yes.
And then once that the new leadership came in, then that's whenever you started doing the examinations, or were you doing before?
No, I've been an examiner for a very long time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, long time.
How do the examinations work? Well, I was going to say, when people who might be interested in joining the Magic Circle and they have to go through that, particularly we'll get to people who are overseas or don't live here, how they could join too. But what is the process that one would have to go through to join the Circle and the examination? How does that work and what they should expect?
It all starts, obviously, with applying. So you have to apply to start with, of course. And then there's an interview process. You're interviewed by a couple of people from the examinations team. I'm not involved with that at all. Mm-hmm. Just to assess, because sometimes you get people just trying it on, or they think it's real magic, or they might think it's astrology or something. It's just I think it's so the examinations team just vet people that they realize what it is, ascertain sort of like the level of their magical knowledge, because if they're brand new to it, then they will recommend local clubs to them to sort of help them, that this, you know, when you've got a bit more knowledge and a bit more time under your belt, then you'd be ready to join circle. For people they think that could pass the exam, they accept them as apprentices, and then they've got 2 years to work towards their exam. Mm-hmm. As they do, and it all culminates when they think they're ready, or when the examinations team think they're ready, they put them forward, and there is the exam, as you've seen this evening. Mm-hmm. There's that exam, but that's what it's all heading towards.
And they're performing, actually, like I saw this evening, before a live audience of members.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but for now, thanks to sort of like this post-COVID world where we've got Zoom and all that business, mm-hmm. We now also have examinations over Zoom as well, on, you know, virtual, online, call it whatever you want, mm-hmm. which is so much easier, not just for people from abroad. It's a lot easier for people not from England or Great Britain or whatever.
But have long distance,
you want to call us this week.
Coming up to Scotland this week.
But also for people who travelling here on a Monday is difficult. Mm-hmm. Like if you live in Edinburgh, that's an 8-hour drive.
Right.
That's but 8 hours one way, 8 hours right. the other. And so you'd want that. It's difficult for them. Some people still want to come down, but being able to do it over that, which just makes it more accessible. So it's more available to more people.
It seems like this evening there were a lot of people in the bar and in the Devant room during examination, and just kind of there was a sense of excitement, I guess. And I was talking to Marvin Berglas about that, and he was saying we are getting more members. You think it is because of the streamlined way of
the accessibility? We're more accessible than ever before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so again, you can be anywhere in the world, I guess, and you can do an examination, because I noticed they had a monitor set up there, so that way that you could have been Zooming somebody in,
yep.
and you have in the past, I guess.
Yes.
Okay. And they get to see and hear the kind of response they're getting from the audience.
The Zoom exams are not done in front of a live audience like today. No, that's they don't happen on Mondays. They happen throughout the week when it's convenient, because
different time zones.
Different time zones when it's convenient. Somebody can't sort of like do it in the middle of their working day, but mm-hmm. and so that will be a smaller audience, but watching virtually online.
But you as an examiner and the others, are three examiners, is that right?
Three okay. examiners, yes.
So you are watching that person in live time, though. They're not just sending in a tape to you.
No, it's done live, mm-hmm. yeah.
That's what I mean.
But on the screen.
And is it a point system, kind of like FISM, that you have to have so many points, or how does the exam work?
Yeah, it's marked out of 20. Mm-hmm. The pass mark is 12. There are two sets. There's for magical ability and, you know, performance style. So the sort of like the technical side of it, mm. and then the presentation side of it. So you've got the two things. And 12 and above is a pass in both. 18 and above is a pass at AIMC level, mm-hmm. which is, you know.
Go straight into associate.
Straight in as mm-hmm. associate of the Inner Magic Circle. But they're aiming for 12 or above.
If they are below 12, then you're going to be saying you can come back later, or you, as you say, make recommendations saying there are other clubs around that you should probably join.
If somebody is unfortunate enough not to pass for whatever reason, then there are forms to fill out. The examiners mm-hmm. fill out the forms of, you know, what wasn't right, what they thought needs work on, and, you know, not just a negative list, but what we liked, what needs work, and so on, for them to take and to work on the little bits that. Because generally, somebody that fails an exam, unfortunately, it's going to be close because they've got to that point. Mm-hmm. They should, you know, nobody's put forward for an exam unless they're capable of passing it.
Sure.
So it's going to be little things that just need a bit of work.
Well, like this evening, again, because we had live performers and live audience, a lot of times, of course, the performer will feed on the energy of the audience. And if they're just kind of doing a Zoom with the examiners, it's kind of hard to, because it's hard for you to react and write down, jot down, whatever.
The energy is so different.
I would think so.
Yeah.
That's kind of my point.
But most people that do the Zoom exams are going to be people that are hobbyists, etc., and they're not used to performing to more than two or three people anyway.
Yeah.
They might do it in the staff room or, you know, in the kitchen at the office or whatever.
Right.
They're used to a smaller number. So I think for them, it's possibly easier. Possibly. I don't know. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then going back to something I mentioned earlier, as far as you doing a one lady show, have you done a lot of those? Is that something that you prefer, or do you prefer like strolling?
I can't stand doing strolling magic.
Okay.
I really don't like it. I'll do it if I have to, you know, if it's an event.
Do you do strolling magic or strolling mentalism, or a combination there again?
Magic mentalism. They think it's magic. It'll be a bit of both.
Okay.
You know, you think of a number, I'll tell you what it is. It's magic, really, as far as they're concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All that sort of thing. Brainwave. Is that magic? Is that mentalism? Does it matter?
Okay.
It's a damn good trick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I will do strolling occasionally.
Why do you not like it?
I'm not sure. I used to. I'm not really sure. I think it's just the repetition.
That's true, because you are kind of going from group to group and same tricks.
Start, stop, start, stop, start, stop. And now that I mostly do stage stuff, parlor and upwards, I know different now. And that's where I feel most at home. And, you know, doing a much longer set, a 40 minutes plus show is nice. And the energy level you can keep and tailor it. Whereas the little bursts that you do in strolling, it's possibly an age thing as well. I find it exhausting now.
I can understand that from my age.
Absolutely exhausting.
Uh-huh.
And they're usually noisy, really noisy, and I can't talk for days afterwards. I've got a bit of a throat issue going on at the moment. So it's, you know, I haven't got any close-up shows booked at the moment, which I'm really pleased about, because my doctor will go nuts.
So the kinds of things, again, that you're doing with the larger stage shows and stand-up shows, in getting booked, I would imagine there are perhaps more opportunities for that in the UK than there are for some of these kinds of shows in the US. And I say that because it seems there are a lot of magicians in a small country. I mean, that's not much bigger than Virginia, you know, but there are maybe thousands of magicians within the country, whereas in state of Virginia, there may be 200 kind of a thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just, so I would think they wouldn't be working if there wasn't some place to work. So where do you work often? I mean, are they for corporations or?
Yeah, it's mostly
private
events, corporate events, private events, the private people that have either seen me before or have been recommended, and I don't advertise anywhere. But at the moment, I'm mostly working in the Netherlands.
Okay.
Which has happened by accident. But yeah.
Do you have an agent over there, or how does that come about?
No, it's, I went over to do the Amsterdam Magic Show anniversary show, and they wanted an all-female lineup. So I went over and did that, and it was so much fun. Really was great. And Fritz, who runs it all over there, is just brilliant. But there was somebody who runs a comedy club in the audience who said, could you come and do my place? Okay. So I did. And then she's recommended me somewhere else, and they've put me somewhere. So I'm playing a lot of comedy clubs in the Netherlands. Yeah.
Now, from here to there, how far is that? Just a short plane ride?
Oh, it's an hour and 10 minutes.
Oh, my. Okay. Yeah. So you can get over there pretty easily. I mean, it's like Houston and Dallas as far as the flights go.
Well, we're at the Magic Circle now, and I live in Oxford. It's an hour and a half for me to get home from here.
Okay. You know, in another half hour, you can be in the Netherlands. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Just from the airport. So you go to Heathrow, I guess, as opposed to Gatwick?
I usually fly from Southampton, because that's where I'm from.
Okay.
And the family's still there. So I usually go down and stay with my mum, and then fly from there, because there's a lot less people there. Is much quicker to get through security.
And when you get into the Netherlands, do you try to book as many shows, I guess, back to back, as opposed to coming back here for a week and then something else you got, or do you stay for a while?
Yeah. They're always booked before I go.
No, no. What I mean are several, as opposed to saying just a one-off going over.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes a one-off. Mm-hmm. So like next week I'm back there. I've got four shows over 4 days.
Makes sense.
So that's terrific. I'm really happy about that. Three in Amsterdam, one in Utrecht.
Yeah. So you're not cooling your heels on your own nickel, I guess. You're not paying for your own lodging, on your off nights.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's all good. I've got a nice hotel. They're all central. It's all paid for. It's great. And I don't have any, I'm not sitting around twiddling my thumbs because I've got a lot of friends over there. I've got plenty to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots to do over there.
In your mentalism show, do you do a series of predictions or what types of things? I mean, what are your powers, I guess, would be the best way of saying that. I mean, is it psychokinesis? Is it clairvoyancy? How do you see what your power is?
Predictions is the main thing, if you wanted to pick a particular element. Mm-hmm. Lots of predictions, sort of like woven throughout the show, all leading up to the big one at the end, where everything comes together with this huge prediction, usually from a mass prediction system where it all comes out on a big piece of paper or a big scroll or anything. Producing, everything was foretold, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But lots of little predictions throughout the whole show, often as a callback to something that happened prior to show that where things make out. It could be a particular card that's come out or a number or whatever. Depends on the show, yeah.
Yeah, I was asking that because I remember talking to Bob Cassidy about that sometime, and he said that you need to be kind of clear as to what your powers are as opposed to being able to doing a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
You know, so it's clear to the audience. It's like, okay, well, she's going to do this.
Yeah.
You know, makes sense.
I think generally if you wanted to say sort of like, what is my superpower? I'm just somebody that weird stuff happens around.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, rather than I can predict things or, I can see into the past or whatever. It's just interesting things happen around me. I think that's the angle I'm
You don't want
towards.
Something necessarily be a series of envelopes that you got here or there. It's like, okay, and my prediction was or my prediction is. And so it could be kind of, okay, well, it's another prediction trick.
You know,
so it can't seem that way.
It's so easy to get carried away with envelopes because envelope tricks
is.
Are great.
Yeah.
We all love envelopes.
That's right.
But, I'm terribly guilty of putting too many into a show. Mm. Thankfully, my wife, who I think it'd be fair to say really can't stand magic at all, she'll watch it and go, yeah, but that's another envelope. And you go, yeah, but it's a good envelope.
Yeah, you need someone to wake you up.
But she's often like, yeah, you're right, it's another envelope. As far as somebody that has no idea what I'm doing is concerned, it's the same trick.
So she's saying to you, basically, you need to decide which one to get rid of.
Yeah, pick one. Get rid of the rest.
Yeah. Well, as a result, your show gets stronger and stronger.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because you get rid of the weaker things.
Yes.
You need to have someone who is kind of being a good director, which I've often said you need to have someone outside looking in because you can judge yourself, but sometimes you're wrong
You see, a lot of magicians work on their own and they put their show together and they're great. But having external input from non-magicians, I think is really, really a powerful tool.
It is.
A really powerful tool. When I first started doing stage work, it was at Wilton's Musical. The artistic director there got me to do it. And she helped curate the show, essentially, and sort of like, don't do this, do this. And it grew. I've got some really brilliant friends within the magic world whose opinion I absolutely trust. Ian, who you mentioned earlier.
Sure.
He has phenomenal insight in tiny little touches. Scott Penrose is brilliant. He'll watch a show and he can give me notes that will be about things that are not to do with the magic. There'll be little things. It'll be just the way you're standing or tiny little touches. And magically, I discuss almost everything with Richard Pinner. Mm-hmm. We work on each other's shows when we've got ideas.
You got some good people there, you mentioned.
He's a phenomenal mind. And the end product and the start of a product, right at the start of when I've got an idea for something and right at the end when something's finishing, the absolute litmus test for it is my wife. If she goes, that's good, I know it's worth working on.
Right.
If she goes, what? Oh, and it's back to the drawing board, because it doesn't matter how much time I've spent on it. If she doesn't think it's worth it, I know she's right.
Yeah.
And it will be really annoying because I'll have invested a lot of time in it, but you've got to be able to kill your babies sometimes.
She's a good audience member then, because she's looking at it with a different perspective. It's not as a magician.
Yeah.
Or as an assistant.
Yeah.
Or someone who is really kind of on the inside and understands all that. She's looking at it from the entertainment value.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. She has no magical knowledge.
Yeah.
And she's happy to keep it that way, because she can see whether it's a good effect or not.
What about from a directorial standpoint of saying, well, what if you put this trick here or move this around a little bit, would it make this other trick stronger because you've kind of led up to it? Does she tell you like those kinds of things also? Or is that what Scott Penrose and some of the other guys
do?
Yeah,
that's where Scott and Richard and Ian and come in. And I've been doing it long enough now to know what should follow what and what type of effects, how you should separate things or how you should group things. And yeah, depending on the length of the show, because obviously every corporate event is going to be different.
Which is my other question about, do you have like an A, B, and C show so we can go back and do that same corporation the next year, but you've got a B show you're doing now or something that is a little bit different because you don't want to say, I think I just saw her last year. You
know, yeah, not so much shows, but categories of tricks, I think. I'm really fortunate that because I had a 10-year residency at Wilton's Music Hall, where I was doing at least...
10 years, wow.
Yeah, at least 6 stage shows a year. I have got a lot of material.
Okay, I guess so.
Some of it has only ever been performed once.
Okay.
Obviously, but some of it, if people say that's worth working on, I've carried on working on it. So I've got quite a pool of... It's not all A-list material, but I've got quite a lot of material that I can call upon to not pad out a second show, if necessary, but that I know is going to be good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, not all the A-list material will be in an A-list show for a company.
Right.
I know there will still be stuff
solid.
That if I get booked again next year, there's still the solid material that they haven't seen yet.
Right. You say you're not wild about doing strolling magic or like a cocktail parties and that kind of a thing. Have you ever thought about doing, let's say, like cruise ships?
No.
Okay. That's not something that particularly interests you?
Not really. It's never really been on my radar. I mean, I used to have a massive phobia of water. I didn't want to be on boats. Boats were not for me. I'm over it now. I don't know when that stopped. I mean, you know, I'm going on a cruise next week.
Okay. So, I guess you'll find out.
So I'm fine now. But no, it never appealed.
Okay.
Don't know why. It's not something I ever chased.
Right.
It might have been right for me. I'll never know.
Okay. Well, I wondered like if there were other alternate streams of revenue, different venues or opportunities. I mean, like, obviously you wouldn't want to work restaurants because that's the same thing as strolling, basically doing over and over and over and over. And
yeah, and used to do it,
yeah,
as did we all. Yeah. Cut my teeth in the restaurant.
Yeah, but essentially and eventually you're kind of say, okay, well, I'm refining my interests. I no longer want to do that or I'm not interested in continuing. I would rather do this, this, and this, you know, whatever. So you kind of feel like you've gotten to an age where you're comfortable in your shoes,
in your
high heels.
Yeah, very comfortable. Yeah, I know what I like. I know what my strengths are.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't want to do stage magic. That I was very happy being a close-upper when I was younger. It's a young person's gig, really, but doing close-up. I was sort of pushed into doing stage magic, but I really grew there. And then when I go back to doing close-up now, I still do it occasionally. There's some charities that I do it for. And a few people that I will go and do stuff for. I'll do it. I can still do it. Everybody has a great time.
Right.
But by the end of it, I'm thinking, oh, God, thank God that's over. I've had enough. It's that repetition and that doing it. And like I say, it's exhausting. It's a young person's job, close-up magic.
That's true. Yeah. Being on your feet for a long time and kind of, I think the hardest job of a strolling magician is to leave a group, because once that you have endeared yourself to them, to have to do that again with another group, to do it all over again and get them on your side. And by doing that, you know, okay, well, here is a proven method because I know these tricks are the things that got me in with this group. So I'm going to do them, replicate that again. And then after a few minutes, they're thinking you're the greatest things and sliced bread. It's like, I got to leave this group and start all over again.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing to do. So oftentimes people stay with the same group and too long.
And I find strolling magic particularly is mentally challenging as well, because when you start, you've got all these little pockets of fours and fives all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you've done three or four groups, everyone's like, oh, there's Janet from accounts, and the groups have all sort of mixed and mingled. So you'll go to a new group, and you'll have seen half of them already.
Yeah.
So then they've got to get the B set, and then the groups get polluted even more, and then it's a material killer.
That's true. So again, mentalism and magic is kind of what you have been into. Do you see yourself kind of at a point right now where you're still trying to decide, even refining that, or are you just kind of satisfied? It's like, I think I'm comfortable in my skin from here on out.
Yeah, I'm really happy with what I'm doing and mm-hmm. how I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's working.
Can't
well.
Can't say anything else to change because it's working.
It's working well for me.
Yeah, and you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
Right. And you're going to travel then with it as well, say going to the Netherlands as well. Any other countries or places that you travel to or go to
not at the moment.
Okay.
No.
Yep. Have you thought about working at other conventions, magic conventions, and performing at...
No. No, I don't go to conventions.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Are you going to Blackpool this week? Or nope. Okay.
I don't enjoy it.
Because it's too many people?
There's too many people. There's too much going on. I get that a lot of people really, really like conventions, particularly mm-hmm. Blackpool. I know I'm in the minority here, but I'm aware of that. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I'm not trying to tell everybody else they're wrong. It's just not for me.
Not for you.
No, there's loads of lectures, if you can even see what's going on, of material that I'm not going to do.
Mm.
There's a lot of queuing. My attention span can't cope with watching a long show. A long magic show
mm-hmm.
With all the variety shows. It's just not for me.
Those evening galas can go on for hours.
And you know, how many Lincoln rings does somebody need to see? And then you've got the social side of it later on. There's just too many people around, and it's really easy to be lonely in a place of that packed.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that, being lonely, even though you're surrounded by people.
You can find, there's lots of groups you can join. You can go and join groups, but you're just making small talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not comfortable doing that. So I feel a bit on edge around there. I'd want my safe space being with a group of trusted friends, in which case, why should we go to Blackpool?
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. If you are not outgoing and social, that's true because you are comfortable whenever you're, you don't necessarily like to do strolling, as we were saying, but at least with that, you have a prop. You have something that you can show people without having to say, hey, that soccer team's really doing great this year, or whatever. You know what I mean? You're not having to engage in some sort of social contract.
Yeah, you're almost delivering a script.
Yeah.
And leaving.
Yeah. And so magic really has been a crutch for you in social atmospheres, would you say?
In what way?
Well, a crutch from the standpoint that it helps you to approach a group by showing the magic. You feel comfortable because, hey, I know this, but I don't feel comfortable talking about, like I said, sports or the weather or whatever else necessarily.
On a social side, no, I never take magic into the social side of my life.
Okay, so you separate the two then?
They're very separate.
Okay.
Yeah.
People know you're a magician, I guess. And And so when they ask, what do you say?
And you hear a lot of people saying, I've got to have something on me so that generally, when people ask, oh, what do you do? And you say, oh, I'm a magician. They find that fascinating. They're interesting.
Sure.
And they want to talk about it. A lot of people that want to do a trick are forcing it on for their own benefit, not for the people they're talking to. Not always the case, but mostly people are interested and they want to talk about it and they've got great, how did you get into it? What do you do? And it's a fascinating discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be working as well.
Yeah. And so it's, understand you don't need to show them a trick then necessarily. But sometimes somebody will say, can you do a trick? And then I think that the better question is, where can I see you perform? And perhaps that may be the answer, saying, well, rather than showing you something, well, let me just tell you, I'm going to be at this theater, I'm going to be doing something here soon. Why don't you come and see me and we'll do it there?
Yeah, yeah. But I don't find myself in a lot of social situations where I have this conversation mm-hmm. anyway.
Okay. Because you separate the two lives.
Yeah, and I've got a group of friends who all know what I do and I know what they do. And
that's not what defines them.
They don't need to see it.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. Yeah,
and I don't mix in, go out into lots of, I won't go down the pub and just go and meet a load of random strangers. That's,
yeah.
that's not for me.
Right. I understand. Yeah, it sounds like you got a home life, you know, with a wife and everything. So that's why it's like, I got a place to go back. I don't need to go to the pub.
I'm super happy at home.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, I get quite annoyed when I've got to leave.
Yeah. Yeah, please, I don't want to leave. Well, it's about that time. I got that show to do. Yeah, yeah. Well, as we close, thank you very much. I really enjoyed our conversation. Went so fast. I want to ask about your magic word. My podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So I always like to know, what is it that drives you? What would be a phrase that is something? It can be a word. It can be a mantra, a phrase, or something that gets you up in the morning that's important to you.
Humor.
Humor. I love that. Okay. Yeah. Keep it light. Be humorous. Humor.
The world is a funny place.
World is a funny place.
Yeah,
got to remember that and live accordingly. It sounds like, you know, your shows include a lot of that then too, obviously, for them to keep bringing you back and keep those audiences coming too.
Yeah, the humor is important.
Yeah.
Humor is important.
Catherine, thank you very much. I appreciate you being my guest and today. So that was Catherine Rhodes. This is Scotty out. Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Catherine, for being my guest this week and for taking some time to sit down and chat with me and tell me a little bit about yourself and what you've been working on. And I wish you every success in your future endeavors. I also want to suggest that you listeners go out and check out the website for the Portland Magic Jam. If you happen to be anywhere up in the upper northwest of the United States, or you can get there or plan to be there sometime in early April, coming up very soon, just right around the corner, less than a month away, the 4th through the 6th. Be sure to go and check that out. And also a reminder to go to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com, where you can go to the convention guide. And there you will see where you can click to visit their website for more information, as well as other conventions that might be in and around your area. I also just wanted to point out just a passing during this last week. A good friend of mine, Mercer Helms, had passed. He disappeared from this earthly plane, and he was a good friend, someone I used to work with at the Magic Island in Houston. He was an accomplished dove magician and had worked with Phyllis Diller for a long number of years and traveled with her, and in fact, for a while, was even married to her daughter. And he ended up retiring in Houston, and I wish we would have gotten together more often. Of course, I moved from Houston a couple of years ago and kind of missed that opportunity to get with him on any kind of regular basis. But he was around the same age as Walter Blaney, and he was of that same age and generation, I guess. So you kind of have a general idea who he was. But you can go back and listen to an episode that Mercer and I had recorded a few years ago in his retirement community. So aloha, my friend. We'll miss you and see you again down the road somewhere. I also want to encourage everyone, while you're at the magicwordpodcast.com website, that you click on and subscribe to our pod letter. So this way that you keep up to date with who's going to be coming up from week to week, and also who's going to be on our show this week, as well as suggestions from the archives. And if we have contests, we notify you there. You'll be the first to know, so you can sign up for those contests for free gifts, free prizes from time to time. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to keep it light and keep it humorous. And look for the humor in the world, because there's a lot out there if you look for it. This is Scotty out.